And welcome 118 of Shmuel. 118 out of who knows how many. I wanted to go back to something that that we discussed last week, because I realized I had skipped the source on the source sheet, and I thought that I should not. And it was just by accident that I missed it. It was at the end of our discussion about Ke'ilah and their willingness to turn David over to Shaul, right, as predicted by the Urim Betumim, the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. So I had said at the end of our discussion of that story that we see here a betrayal of David by his own family, the people he had been protecting. And I noted how there's a reflection of what happened with Shimshon in that. But I skipped one source. If you take a look at source number one, this is very important. It's Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah, and it talks about why Yehuda was selected to lead the Jewish people. And it's based on a pasuk in Yaakov's blessing to Yehuda. Gur Aryeh Yehuda. Okay, Gur Aryeh, which we understand to mean a young lion. So, Melameid Shenasa Lo Gevura Shel Ari V'chutzpah Shel Guryo. It teaches that Yehuda is given the strength of the lion and the nerve, that's my translation for chutzpah, of the young lion. And that pasuk continues, the bracha continues, Miteref Bini Alisa. So there are different ways you could translate that phrase or those that set of words. I'm translating it the way the Medrash does here. From Teref. Teref is when you tear up your prey, you attack your prey. Bini, my son, Alisa. So, from predation, that predation was the best I could come up with as a one-word translation of teref, right? The predatory act. My son, you arose. And he says, Mitirfo shel Yosef Alisa v'nis Alisa. From the predation of Yosef, from the act of teref done to Yosef, you arose and you were elevated. Mitirfo shel Tamar, Alisa v'nis Alisa. From the predation of Tamar, when she was going to be killed, you arose. And the idea is that Yehuda elevated himself after those initial events, after what he was involved in doing to Yosef, the sale of Yosef, after what he is involved in doing to Tamar, where she was almost executed. So after that, you arose, beginning with admitting his role with Tamar, continuing with him freeing Shimon by bringing Binyamin down to Egypt, putting himself on the line for Binyamin regarding the goblet of the viceroy, then fighting for Eretz Yisrael at the start of the Book of Shoftim. He's the first one to fight. And finally, he's also the first one to fight on behalf of Yabesh Gilad. If you remember back in chapter 11, when Shaul has first become king and Yabesh Gilad is under threat, Yehuda is the first one. It's a practice of standing up for others, endangering themselves in order to take care of the vulnerable that we highlight in Yehuda. And it's what makes Yehuda eligible to lead. It's a trait that we identify in David, for that matter. And we look at that, and we look at the way that David exemplifies that. He endangers himself in order to help everybody else, including in order to help Ke'ilah, right? He's on the run from Shaul. He's dealing with Plishtim as an enemy. He wants to try to convince the Plishtim he isn't a threat. That's what he tried back in chapter 21. David exemplifies good Yehuda, looking out for others, as opposed to the people of Ke'ilah, who completely undermine that narrative. Because here we have people from Yehuda, and they are they are endangering David. They're willing to turn David over to Shaul. You follow? It's just that Medrash amplifies what we were saying last time about the betrayal. Okay. But let's move back to what we're up to. We are up to 23:18, Chaf Gimel Yud Chet. We are in David and Yehonatan's last meeting. And we weren't sure exactly when this happens in terms of the events within the chapter. We had two different ways to read it. The commentators were split. Either this is when David is hiding in Midbar Zif, Shaul has already found out and is en route, or this is before Shaul finds out that David is in Midbar Zif. Either way, Yehonatan comes to Shaul. Yehonatan has this very conflicted role. On the one hand, he wants to strengthen David, and we saw that in sentence 16, it actually said, "Vayachazek es yado." He strengthens the hand of David. Hang on, I'm just finding the place within my own Shmuel here. On the one hand, "Vayachazek es yado be'elokim," he strengthens David's hand, and he offers him support, and he's going to make a covenant. On the other hand, if this is when Shaul is already en route to Zif, that means Yehonatan is likely in Shaul's military camp. And they're pursuing David, whether they know that or not. And he is identified, Yehonatan is named here, the son of Shaul, highlighting his link to Shaul for the first time since the beginning of chapter 19. Yehonatan, we said, demonstrates his emunah, his faith. My father knows you're going to be the king, and it's all going to come to pass, and I'm going to be your second in command. Yehonatan doesn't know all of this is going to happen, but he is confident that it will happen because he believes that Hashem has selected David and that David is going to be the next king. Clear? Okay. So that brings us to the covenant. Sentence 18, Pasuk Yudchet. Vayechretu shneihem brit lifnei Hashem. The two of them, David and Yehonatan, made a covenant before God. Vayeshev David b'Chorsha. David stays in Chorsha. Chorsha, the forest where he has been hiding. V'Yehonatan halach lebeito. And Yehonatan went home. I don't know if home means literally home. Home means back to being with Shaul. Sounds like it means home. So let's refresh our memories here. The first two covenants. The first one was in chapter 18, sentence 3. The second one was in chapter 20, sentences 12 to 17. The first one just said there was a brit. There was a covenant. It didn't say anything about what it included. We've speculated that it involved David staying close to Shaul, and that's why David needs, close to Yehonatan, and that's why David needs Yehonatan's permission to be able to flee. That was the first covenant. The second covenant was much more explicit. In chapter 20, it was a covenant about family, right? If you flip back to it for a second, chapter 20, sentences 12 to 17, we saw there that He says, Hashem is going to be with you as he was with my father. This is Yehonatan speaking. And he says, I want you to continue to be kind to my household forever. That's what Yehonatan asks of David. So what is added in our brit? The two of them made a covenant before God. David stays in the forest, Yehonatan goes home. What's new? Sorry?
Before God.
I'm sorry?
Before God.
Before God.
About God and the others.
Good. So that's definitely a piece of this. Doing this before God, and if you take a look on your sheet, it's source number 2, Radak says, Lifnei Hashem, Urim v'tumim shehayu sham im Evyasar HaKohen. The Urim v'tumim that Evyasar had brought. O perusho shakel yisparach ye eid bein shneihem. Or alternatively, when he says before God, it means they declared God should be a witness between us. Either way, it's about strengthening the commitment that they're making to each other. That's really what this bris seems to be. However, you could offer another suggestion. You could suggest that maybe the previous sentence is part of this covenant. In the previous sentence, Yonatan said to David, don't be afraid. Shaul isn't going to find you. You're going to reign over Israel, and I will be your second in command. Maybe that's part of the brit. Maybe that's part of the covenant as well. it's interesting because in chapter 20, he spoke about what would happen if he should die and said, you know, support my family, right? He seemed to think he wasn't going to live. Now he seems to be more upbeat. I'm going to live and I'm going to be with you. I wonder if it isn't also a way to say, I know I keep leaving you and going back to my father, but ultimately I'm going to stand by your side. You know, I'm on your side. You follow? Comments and questions about the Brit, about this covenant. So I'll add a couple.
Rabbi,
in, yes. Yes,
does
Susan.
Does this covenant show that Yonatan is not a prophet, so to speak, that Yonatan, because what he's saying doesn't happen?
Right. So Yonatan is never really listed, I think, as one of the prophets. Like, it's not as
okay,
though that
was
would be
the wrong word, that he didn't have Ruach Hashem or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. But unless you say he's just doing it in order to generally demonstrate his loyalty. Like, if I live, I will be your second. It doesn't have to mean that it's a prediction. That's another way to read it. Claudette.
What is important about this is what he said about his father's knowledge about David. Because he said that the father knows that you are going to be king.
Right. So I don't understand what you're saying.
In the statement in my book, it says, "And my father knows that you're going to be king."
Yeah.
So if Saul was running around not telling the people what he knew, Jonathan told him that the father knew.
Oh no, I'm sorry. Now I understand what you're saying. The assumption here is that when he says "my father knows," it means even my father knows. Everybody already knows, and even my father knows it. That's the idea. So, added notes here regarding this dynamic between David and Yehonatan. First of all, oh yeah, Leona, you're muted.
Okay, this one works better. That's why I moved down to the computer room. I just noticed it's probably not at all significant, but it seems to me this is the first time it says Shnehem.
Is it?
In the past, we always discussed that it seemed to be Yonatan initiating it out of his love for David, and we even asked the question, if I recall, did David reciprocate
right.
that kind of love?
And that's actually where I'm going.
This is the first time I see the two words, by Yuchatu Shneya.
Oh, yes.
Which gives an inclusivity of David, which I didn't quite see in the other two instances.
Right, and yes and no. I just went back to the first Brit in 18:3, Yud Chet Gimel, and there it says, Vayichros Yonasan vidavid Brits. So the question goes back to a question that we asked back when we read that originally, which was, it's written with a singular verb, and it continues with the singular and the rest of it, be'ahava so, oh so cannot show. So was it really Yonatan made the bris with David? In which case, you would be right. This is the first time. And it's indeed possible. It's possible. I mean, where I was about to go with this is the fact that at the end of chapter 20, when they last saw each other, David was overwhelmed with emotion. He cried more than Yehonatan. We had different ways to read that clause at the end of chapter 20. Does it have to mean that he cried more than Yehonatan? That's certainly a read of it. And we explained then that David sees how much Yehonatan is willing to sacrifice for him, and he's moved by it. So does the fact that David doesn't speak here mean that he has reverted to an earlier stage, or do we take what you're saying, where it says shnehem, and it's a plural verb that indicates that it's actually David is alongside him, even if he's not speaking in any way recorded in the text, he is engaged in in this bris, which I definitely think you can maintain. I would add a note here. And I brought it for you on the sheet in source number 3. Professor Keel in the Da'at Mikra says something back in chapter 20. He said, quoting Professor Moshe Tzvi Siegel, ומסתבר שדוד בעדינות נפשו, ומתוך קשרי נפשו מיונתן, לא רצה להתייחס לדברי יונתן. Back in chapter 20, when David did not speak, he didn't respond to Yonatan, so he suggested that the reason why is because David is too sensitive. He didn't want, with his connection to Yonatan, he didn't want to address Yonatan's words. Kiluhu v'lo Yonatan yamelach haba, because Yonatan's words basically said, you're going to be the next king, I am not going to be the next king, and David feels like it's offensive to Yonatan for him to acknowledge that, for him to affirm that. And the same may apply here as well. It could be that David is, as Leona suggests, an equal partner in making the covenant, doing this alongside Yehonatan, that he has come to embrace Yehonatan in a much stronger way, and his silence should simply be read as, what's there to say when Yehonatan has just told you, you're going to be the king and I'm going to be your second in command? Yehonatan, who is the crown prince. So it's possible that that's why David doesn't respond. You could definitely suggest that. Rabbi Zak notes something else here. Had Yehonatan's pledge to join David come true, that would have radically changed the identity of the Jewish people and the path of Jewish history. Take a look at source number 4 at Rabbi Zak's article. He says, Hatza'ato shel Yonatan, Yonatan's suggestion, meaning his proposal that he is going to serve, yachol liyot bitui ideali l'shiluv bein Beit Shaul u'Beit David, that could have been an ideal expression of a merger of the two houses, which, you know, we tried beforehand with Merav and Michal and didn't pan out. Uvmabat rachav yoter bein Binyamin v'Yehuda. Taking a broader look at it, it would have been a blend between Binyamin and Yehuda. B'nei Rachel, Binyamin, u'b'nei Leah, Yehuda from Leah. Ela shekedei lahagshim achdut zu yesh tzarach b'ktzat yoter me'asher kritat brit. But in order to bring that to fruition, in order to make that happen, you need more than just making a covenant. Gam kan, kamo parakhaf, madgish ha-mikra tziyumo shel ha-mifgash. He says here, like in chapter 20, the text emphasizes how the encounter ends. Vayeshev David b'chorsha, David is in the forest, v'yehonatan halach leveto, and Yehonatan goes home. Yehonatan karach et goralo b'goral Shaul. Yonatan, at the end of the day, ties his fate to that of Shaul. There's no getting around it. V'lo hitzaref leDavid, he didn't join David. V'alkein lo zacha lagshim et chalomo, and that's why he wasn't able to do it. And instead, he dies for it. So it's not to be. But this would have been an opportunity for a union of the two houses. Interesting. And a third note on this. Yehonatan's visit is bracketed by Ke'ilah first, right? Betraying David, or theoretically betraying David. They didn't get the chance, but they would have betrayed David. And Ziph betraying David afterward. Those are the people of Yehuda who are afraid of Shaul. But Yehonatan, on the other hand, who has been threatened by Shaul, who has been assaulted by Shaul, and who has the most to lose in terms of the throne, remains loyal to David. Right? Yehuda betrays him before and after, and Yehonatan is loyal. It's very striking in terms of its presentation of Yehonatan, and I think it's, in essence, it's a sort of valedictory appearance for Yehonatan, because this is it. The next time we see him, he's gonna be killed. So that, you know, we're highlighting his loyalty. So to summarize, Yehonatan can't stay away from David, but he can't join David either. And as I said at the outset, when we started this last week, there's fallout from this meeting because David has stayed in one place too long. If you take a look on your sheet, Malbin says in source number 5, Uvadai hayadas David lotzeis mechor shal makom acher. David definitely intended to leave the forest to go somewhere else. But because of what it's about to mention, which is what we just read, Shabbat Yonatan Elav, that Yonatan came to him, Nishar Sham, he remained there. So David stays in place because Yonatan has visited. Ralbag is stronger. Ralbag says in source number 6, Nishan David bebrit Yonatan imau, shalo yigale mekom ole aviv. David is trusting. He made a conscious decision. I have a brit with Yonatan. He will not divulge where I am. Therefore, I am safe here. So it actually is a covenant which endangers David in the end, because it leads David to a sense of security, as Ralbag reads it. There's one other sort of long-term result of, it's not really of this covenant, but it's this covenant combined with the previous covenant. And that is David's relationship with Yehonatan's son, Mephibosheth. We're not going to go through everything now. It's really a Shmuel Bet topic. But take a look at source number 7, where I listed for you the chapters where you can find it discussed. In Shmuel Bet chapter 9, we will find David looking to support Mephibosheth, son of Yehonatan. Then there will be trouble. After Avshalom's rebellion, there will be a false accusation against Mephibosheth by his servant Tziva, saying that Mephibosheth is hoping that as a result of the tumult with Avshalom, he's going to get the throne back. And David is going to accept that false accusation by Tziva, which will play out in Shmuel Bet chapter 19. And then finally, Shmuel Bet chapter 21, we get a bizarre story, a very difficult story, about Gibeonim coming to David and demanding punishment for the house of Shaul, and members of Shaul's family will indeed be killed, and David chooses to spare Mephibosheth, son of Yehonatan, because of this relationship that he has with Yehonatan. So there's an impact to these covenants, even though Yehonatan is not going to become David's second in command. Clear? Good? Yes, Claudette.
And all that says something about David, how strong character he has with loyalty.
Oh yes. Chesed and loyalty are primary with David, you bet. And that's something that not only comes up in the positive, in terms of what he does and what he values, but also in terms of his anger when someone violates that. We are not far off now from the story of Naval. It's coming up. And that's going to be a theme in the story of Naval. Susan.
I find that Yonatan is a true Shakespearean tragic character. It's so sad.
Yes.
He's caught between a rock and a hard place the whole time. He's going to die. We know he's going to die. We have this pre-war. And it's just really, I think, one of the saddest characters. He's a good person. He's a sad character.
I'm not sure how Yehonatan would describe himself, whether he would accept that as sad. Yonatan is a person of emunah. He's a person of faith, and he knows that this is coming. Despite what he says here, he has to know by sticking with Shaul, he's endangering, if not dooming, himself.
Really?
Yeah. Well, we said that in the beginning, right?
Because he's very loyal.
We said that back in the beginning when we introduced Yonatan, that they're one of the things, we asked why Yonatan is so enamored of David. And we said he sees the similarities to himself. There was a strong resemblance in their emunah, impulsivity. Like, definitely, there's a very, very close similarity between them.
Yeah, but when you say emunah, I believe he had emunah.
Yeah.
But he had to convey the Navicha on one hand. And I think, I don't know if he prophesied his own death, but thought maybe he can survive the skirmish, or whatever, the war, and come out of it and be able for David. I don't know if he foresaw his death. That's like suicide.
So, because there are no guarantees, I wouldn't call it suicidal. Nonetheless, he does know his father is doomed. He does know. Like, there's no way you can miss it.
Does that make him doomed as well?
Would that make him what? Doomed
That's
as
well? What I'm asking.
And the answer is, I don't know. The answer is, I don't know. Ruth and then Sandy.
He says he wants to be, he's going to be the second in command, so he's assuming he's going to survive.
Yeah, but go back on what he said in chapter 20, and it's not so clear. And again, I'm not so sure what he thinks. I don't think you can say definitively what Jonathan is thinking here. Sandy.
I think that just speaks to who Jonathan is that he's such an honorable man, and he honors his father, and that's his... He's stuck with that. So yeah. As much as he believes in David and he wants David to succeed, that's why he goes almost to warn David and give him confidence. Everything's going to be okay. Don't worry about me. I'll be right by you. Meanwhile, he knows he's obligated to his father. So he knows that, not that in a suicidal way, just out of honor, his own honor.
Right. So I think part of it is honor for his father, but I think part of it is also honor for the king. Remember, the similarities between David and Jehonatan, one of the hallmarks of it, we've already seen it, and it's going to become even stronger in the next few chapters, is his respect for Shaul. David never loses that. And I wonder if that isn't also part of what drives Jehonatan here. I don't know. We don't get enough speech from him to really know. Okay, let's see what happens next. Chapter 23, sentence 19. 19 to 23 refers to the people of Ziph reporting David's location to Shaul. And that's where we are going now. So either Ziph told Shaul about David's location before the previous passage, and Shaul is on his way. And now we're going to reintroduce it just as a way to reorient the reader. That's what Radak and Malbim say. Or it's only now that Ziph is telling Shaul about David's location after the thing with Jonathan, and that's Abarbanel's approach. Either way, we continue to see here that since what happened in Nov, David has lost potential allies, even within his own Shevet, his own tribe. Before we read the Psukim, just a note, who is Ziph? So Ziph is from Yehuda, we've already said that. I gave you in source number 8 a couple of psukim you can look at in Divrei Hayamim, which talk about Ziph as descendants of Kalev ben Yefuneh, who is, of course, one of the leaders in Yehuda. He was the good spy, the good meragel, along with Yehoshua. In terms of the location of Ziph, so I gave you a Google Maps link on the sheet. It's basically southeast of Hebron. Keilah, you may recall, was a little northwest of Hebron. So there's a place now, an archaeological site called Tel Ziph, that is 6 to 7 kilometers south of Hebron. Google Maps actually identifies a village called Ziph in that area. So David has now gone from northwest of Hebron. Hebron was a built-up city, to southeast of Hebron. Professor Keel in the Dot Mikra also notes that in Divrei Hayamim Bet, chapter 11, Rechavam, David's grandson, is going to establish a fortress in Ziph. And he also notes archaeological digs that have been done there. And I gave you a reference to a website I found that actually shows them. If you look at the third bullet point in number 8, that they have found handles of pottery jugs there that are stamped Lamelech for the king. So there was some kind of royal association with Ziph. I don't know exactly when those handles are from. That's unclear. So that's just a little bit about Ziph in general. Let's see.
So is Ziph a person or a place?
So like many places in Tanakh, you start with a person who settles the area or whose descendants settle the area, and they name it for that person. Yeah. So let's read the Psukim now. Sentences 19 to 23. Vayalu Ziphim el Shaul ha-Giv'asa le'mor. People of Ziph go to Shaul in Giv'ah. I'm just going to mute people by default because I'm getting background noise. People from Ziph go to Shaul in Giv'ah, and they say, Hello, David, mistater imanu vamitzados bachorsha. David is hiding among the rocks in the area of the forest. Remember that he's going around different areas. Begivas hachachila, in a place called Givat Hachachila, Asher mi min ha-yeshimon, which is east of the Yeshimon. We've seen these areas earlier, except for Givat Hachachila, which Da Mikra just says is a place in Midbar Zif. It's going to show up again in chapter 26, this place Givat Hachachila. I have nothing else, you know, of substance to say about it. But Ziphites, if you will, turn to Shaul and say, you know, you should come out here. We have found him. Rav Bazak thinks, I see your hand, but I'm waiting until I finish the psukim before I take comments and questions. Rav Bazak thinks that the language that's used here in sentence 20 for who reports David is interesting. It says Zifim, Ziphites. It does not say all of the people of Ziph. Not all of them do it. I'm not so sure that he's correct. In chapter 26, sentence 2, Ziph is going to turn David over again. And there it's going to say, Ha-Ziphim. So I don't know if that means all the Ziphim there, or it just means the ones we knew before. Unclear to me, but it's a thought he suggests. It wasn't everybody in Ziph. Okay, fine. But they say to Shaul in sentence 20, Ve'ata, and now, L'chol avas nafshecha ha-melech laredes, raid. Whenever you want to come down here, come and get him. V'lanu has giro biyad ha-melech. And it is for us to hand him over to the king. Says Abarbanel, they're making two offers. They're saying, if you want to come here yourself and get him, come and get him. Or if you want, we will bring him to you. It's up to you. But, you know, tell us what you want to have happen. Again, this is going to happen again in chapter 26, sentence 2. I also noted for you on the sheet in source number 9, Tehillim Mem Dalet, Tehillim chapter 54, describes David being betrayed by people in Ziph. And it describes him feeling like he has lost all of his allies, all of his support. So you can take a look at that parak in Tehillim and see the way it portrays David at this point. Well, sentence 21. Let's see what Shaul does. Vayomer Shaul. Shaul says, Bruchim atem l'Hashem, you are blessed to God. Ki chamaltem alai. You had mercy on me. You spared me. That's his response. But then he says, Lechuna, you go there. Hachinu od, prepare further. Udu'u ureu as mikomo asher tihiet raglo mi ra'ahu sham. Know the place where his feet are. Who saw him there? I want to come back to that phrase, so I'm not going to translate that phrase at the end of 22 yet. I just want to read 23 first. Shaul's concluding words. Ureu udu'u. See and know. Mikol ha-machavoim asher yischabei sham, all of his hiding places there. Vishavtem elai el nachon v'halachti itchem. And then come back to me with correct news, and I'll go to you. I'm translating El Nachon as correct news. There is a trend in recent writers to argue that there was actually a place called Nachon. Rabbi Samet, Rabbi Zak, Zev Erlich have written articles. It's a big debate in Megadim, the journal, on the question of whether there's a place called Nachon or whether he's saying, give me accurate news. But all the classic commentators say it means, give me accurate news. Valachti, then I'll go with you. If he is anywhere in the land, I will search for him among all of the Alfei Yehuda. Alfei Yehuda means either families of Yehuda or the clans or the thousands of Yehuda. You could take that either way. But Shaul is very interested in making sure that they're going to snare David this time. He doesn't want David getting away again. Okay, I have a few things to say here, but I've been talking for a while, so now I'll take questions and comments. Sandra, thank you for waiting.
No problem. Before the episode with David, when Shaul starts hating or fearing David, were things very good between Binyamin and Yehuda?
So, no.
I'm coming to the question is, why would he trust them?
So, Binyamin and Yehuda, and really it's Leah and Rachel, but or Yehuda and Yisrael, however you want to characterize it, has been a point of conflict since the beginning. And at one point we actually went through it and I tried to track it and show you how it turns up in different ways long before the two kingdoms split. So this was an issue. It's not quite clean. In the sense that when the two kingdoms split, Binyamin is actually going to stay with Yehuda.
Right.
So it's not as simple as saying that there's a divide. It's more complicated than that. But I think maybe what you're saying is part of why Shaul says, make sure you really know where he is. Maybe there really is a sense of not trusting. I don't know.
So what would be the rationale for betraying one of their own?
Because the last people who supported David found themselves dead.
Right. But that was... Okay.
That to me is...
It seems to me that they're going out of their way. Shaul is coming to them and saying, is David there? While you're hiding him. They're reaching out to Shaul.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because they are very afraid of what happens if they don't. If Shaul finds out, you know, remember, the people in Nov, right, had no way to know anything was up until Shaul came in, you know, interrogated Ahimelech, didn't accept his explanation, and slaughtered all of them.
But these people are not doing anything for David. He's just hiding over there. It doesn't say that they are feeding him, they're giving him any kind of help. Like, I just find it strange that they would be mustering him just like that, unless they happen to be very close with Binyamin. And so, he's just said that there was always a tension.
Right. I wouldn't read it as them being close to Binyamin. I would read it as them being really, really afraid. They've just intimidated at this point, and you're right. They haven't done anything that we can see to materially help David. But when you're dealing with a king who really is at this point so paranoid, I mean, I'm going to show you something. I was going to wait to show it to you, but I'll show it to you now. Look back at his language in sentence 21. Blessed are you to God, you had mercy on me. This is like his speech in chapter 22 before Nov, when he said to his people, David is going to kill me, David is lying in ambush for me, and no one is helping me, no one is saving me. The word in Hebrew for having mercy or sparing me, as Malbim would render it, chamaltem, is a word that's a real, in Hebrew you'd call it milamancha. It's a guiding word for Shaul. It shows up over and over again in his career. Chet Mem Lamed is a constant for him. But he's really living in fear, and it's highlighted by the way he elaborates and repeats, right? If you look at his words, there's so much extra verbiage here. Of course, Malbim argues it's not extra. Malbim shows you that every single word here has a meaning, and fine. But the simple read of the psukim and the way the commentators have read it is that Shaul is so panicked, so frightened, that he's not speaking straight. You know, go, prepare further, see, know, the place where his feet are, who saw him there? You know, he's a tricky guy, and so on and so on. They're facing a panicked king. They don't know what Shaul is going to interpret as betrayal. That's the way I understand it, and I think that's why they approach him. That would be my understanding. Leona.
I'm always troubled by some things here, which probably nobody else is, but I find that in spite of his paranoia, in spite of everything, people are very loyal to Shaul.
he has a very strong following. I mean, in Kehillah, David saves them, and yet they go against him to support Shaul, these people in Zeb. So even after his death,
so,
he isn't automatically king, David. He's only crowned in, if I'm correct, in Hebron.
So
and,
you are.
I mean, there's something really interesting about this, the fact that he has such loyalty from his subjects.
So you are entirely right that David is not the threat to Shaul that Shaul thinks he is. For that matter, David never takes an aggressive step against Shaul. Not even when he has the golden opportunity. David is not interested in attacking Shaul in the least. Leave aside the fact that there are people in, you know, who are willing to support Shaul. Keilah, again, I don't accept them as a model because I think, again, they're just scared. But it is certainly true that you have the might of the kingdom behind Shaul, and it is his fear that is really undermining him.
Inside of him.
Yeah. No, this is true. Other questions. I'm not looking for overall comments, but really questions. Yes, Claudette.
It's not a question. I just wanted to say it's sad because who is governing the people? Because he's so...
No, we're going there. We're going there. God willing, we'll get there. I hoped today, but I'm not so sure now. But we're going to talk about that. Okay. So Shaul says to the people, right, you had mercy on me, you're taking my side, that's wonderful. You have to know, though, that David is really tricky. If you take a look at the end of sentence 22, where he says, after he says, Mi ra'ahu sham, who saw him there, you then get six words in Hebrew. Ki amar elai arom ya'rim hu. For he told me, he is clever, tricky, cunning, however you want to translate that word. Who is it who told this to Shaul? So the answer is, depends who you read. Rashi, as well as the Targum before Rashi, say it means, people tell me David is tricky. Ralbag, in his first approach, says, it's Shaul about himself. My heart tells me that he is tricky. But Radak offers, and Ralbag brings this in his second explanation, that no, this is a quote from David, which I think is the simplest read in terms of a pronoun and antecedent. You could make it read, Ki amar elai, because he, and he was David in the earlier part of the sentence, David told me that he is cunning. You want to know why I say to you, you better track him well? Because David says that. Take a look at source number 10. Radak. Ba'ot shahaya imi. When David was still with me, haya umerli, he would tell me, kshayisi shoalo echaya makeba plishtim kokach ve'echaya nishmar mehem. I used to ask him, how in the world are you so good at what you do, David? How is it that you can strike the plishtim and they don't get you? V'haya umerli, he said to me, ki arom ya'arim hu, that he had strategies. Uba'arimus uvesach bulos haya ba'alehem shaloha yunishmarim imenu. He had strategies that he used to attack them and get them off guard. Kein atahu oseh. Well, he's now doing that to me. Mar'eh atzmo b'makom zeh kedei shenevakesh oso sham. He acts as though he's in this place, so that we're going to look for him there. U'machar yeh b'makom acher. And then tomorrow he's somewhere else. We, you know, whack-a-mole. That's what's happening to me as I seek David. So there's a tremendous irony in this statement. There's a remarkable, remarkable irony in this statement. What is he accusing David of doing here?
Fleeing him, getting away from
him. Well, yes. But think in terms of the relationship here. Shaul is saying, David is using his tactics for the Plishtim against me. When in fact, what's actually happening is, Shaul is using his tactics for the Plishtim against David. Right? As Claudette was starting to say before I cut her off, because I want to show you how this is going to play out here. Shaul has stopped governing. Shaul is now, instead of fighting Plishtim, the Plishtim attacked Keilah. Where was Shaul? He's off looking for David. Right? He's accusing David of treating him like the Plishtim, but he's the one who is treating David like he's supposed to be treating the Plishtim. It's the other way around. That, I think, is important. So what we see here is Shaul is in full-on terror of David. And Ziph is in full-out terror of Shaul. As a result, David is in the crosshairs. And what's remarkable here is that Shaul did not mobilize to help Keilah against the Plishtim, but he will mobilize to get David in Keilah and now to get him in Ziph. That's what you're seeing here. And that leads to what comes next, which is the major highlight to me of this perek, even more than David and Yehonatan, which is Shaul has to decide whether he's still king or not. Take a look at what comes next here, starting in sentence 24. Vayakumu vayelchu Zipha lifnei Shaul.
They
got up and they went to Ziph before Shaul. They, says Radak, means the people of Ziph who had reported to Shaul. Right? So, I brought it for you in source number 11. Ela hazifim habaim el Shaul halchu el Ziph. The Ziphites who had come to Shaul now went back to Ziph. Lifnei she'elech sham Shaul halchu heim l'chapes ha'makom shaya sham David be'emet. Right? Before Shaul is going to go there, they wanted to go investigate and make sure we really got him. V'shavu el Shaul, and then they came back to Shaul. V'akasuv lo sipera tshuva. The text doesn't actually report their return to Shaul. Aval acher shamar v'yelech Shaul v'anashav yadanu ki hazifim shavu elav terem lechto. But since it says Shaul and his men went, obviously Ziph went, they found him, and they came back and they reported, and it's just not bothering to give me all the details. Okay. So, they, Ziphites, go to Ziph, live in front of Shaul. V'David v'anashav b'midbar ma'on. David and his men are in this place called Midbar Ma'on, Ba'arava, in the plains, El Yemin HaYeshimon, east of the Yeshimon. Right, we already saw him in Givat HaChachila, which is in the area east of the Yeshimon. Fine. V'yelech Shaul v'anashav levakesh. So Shaul and his men go to look for David. Vayagidu leDavid, and people told David. Who told David? Go back to what we said a couple of weeks ago. Maybe Hashem told David. Maybe people who are loyal to David in Shaul's camp told David. We don't know. We don't have enough information. Commentators differ. Vayered Hasela. He went to the area of the boulders. Vayeshev b'midbar Ma'on, and he sat in Midbar Ma'on. Vayishma Shaul. Vayirdof acharei David midbar ma'on, and Shaul hears David's in midbar ma'on, and he goes after David to midbar ma'on. Vayelech Shaul mitzad ha'har mizeh, v'David va'anashav mitzad ha'har mizeh. So Shaul and his men are on one side of the mountain, David and his men are on the other side of the mountain. Vayhi David nechpaz laleches mipnei Shaul, and David is rushing, trying to get out in front of Shaul. V'Shaul v'anashav otrim el David ve'el anashav lisofsam. And Shaul and his men are doing something to David and his men to catch them. Those who are using a translation, how does your translation render the word otrim?
Encircling
to David and his men. Anyone have a different translation? You have surrounding?
Compassed.
Oh, okay. There are those in the commentaries who read this as sort of one group going around the mountain this way and then the other group kind of, you know, behind them and not quite catching up to them or something along those lines. The other way to take it is they're surrounding the mountain. Radak seems to think that they actually surround the mountain. If you take a look at source number 12, Ava Pisha Amar Shaul Mitzad Ahar Mizeh, even though it said Shaul's beside the mountain, right here on one side, Kamin Sharau Ki Ratzal Livroach Sivavu Heim Hasela. When they saw that he wanted to flee, that he realized that they're pursuing him, they surrounded it. They, actually, I wrote circumnavigated because I wasn't 100% sure, but the more I read Radak, the more I think it's surrounded. V'lo haya lahem ela l'sofsam. All they had to do was to reach out and grab David. David is now absolutely stuck until kishabah malach el Shaul b'sibat nora alilot. Until the malach came to Shaul, because of the Nora Alilot, a term we use for Hashem, the big planner, the mysterious planner, right? Remember, go all the way back to Chana's tefillah of thanks to Hashem, Velo Nitkinu Alilot. All plans are established by God. Chana's shadow is still over this book. So, look at what he's referring to. Pasuk Chav Zayin. They're about to catch David. Umalach ba el Shaul lemor. A malach comes to Shaul saying, Maharav aleicha, hurry, go. Ki fashtu plishtim al haaretz. Because the Philistines have attacked the land. Now what is Shaul going to do? Is he going to say, this is my chance. I just have to close the trap. I can get David finally. Or is he going to say, I'm king over Israel. I better go fight the plishtim. Vayashav Shaul meridof acharei David. Shaul backs off of David. Vayelech lekras plishtim. He went instead to get the plishtim. Al kein karula makomahu sela hamachlakot. And therefore they called that place sela hamachlakot, the boulder of splitting, perhaps. We're going to come back and see what machlakot means. That won't be this week. Vayal David misham vayeshev bimitzadot ein gedi. And David gets away. He goes to the rocks of Ein Gedi. Let me ask you a question here. There's a lot to ask here, this last part of our chapter. But what do you think when you read the opening words of sentence 27? What question comes to mind, and what is your answer?
The whole time I was wondering, where is God? Where is God? And suddenly, here he is. Or, how come we haven't heard his name? There's no Hashem mentioned anywhere. Saying, wow, this is like the night Chinese armor coming and saving him.
So Susan is definitely in the camp that this is a divinely sent creature, malach, in the way that we usually use the word malach colloquially.
Not a messenger.
Sorry?
Not a messenger, in the plain sense of the word, because otherwise it might have said malach Hashem. But when I read this, I thought of a messenger.
So, right, so, I mean, I don't like the word messenger for malach. I would use the word agent. Just because messenger is a little bit less precise. Malach meaning agent is what you're saying. In other words, this is not necessarily an angelic being.
Right.
It's a human being.
Somebody, there's an emergency here. Someone ran out and tried to find Shaul. He knew approximately where he'd be. And
yeah.
He's telling them, look what's happening over here.
Mm-hmm. And you could read it that way. Leona, right. And then Janine.
Me?
Yeah, Leona.
Okay. I want to be short. I just couldn't help but think of an old Yiddish expression. Okay, der Mann tracht und Gott lacht.
Yes.
If anybody knows Yiddish.
Yeah.
It's loosely translated.
Even I know that one.
Man makes all kinds of plans to do things, and God laughs and says, wait a minute, that may not be good that way.
Right.
This is such an old expression, but quite absolutely apropos over here.
Right. Janine?
I just wanted to say whether there were some divine beings, some angelic beings, or whether they were agents. They were agents of Hashem. It was orchestrated by God. It doesn't. It's the same with between Esav and Yaakov. There are differences whether Malach is an angel or an agent.
Right. So that's something I'm going to come back to this next week. But
can I just say one
no, thing? One second. I'm going to come back to this next week, but I do want to just picking up on what Janine said. Even if you believe, as Sandra said, that Malach is actually a human being here, it's nonetheless, the text still chooses to use the word Malach instead of saying Ish. That may be understood as a way to preserve that layer of what's going on. Ultimately, this is God arranging for David's safety one way or another. Susan, hang on there, because Ruth had her hand up before, and then I'll take you. Yeah, Ruth.
No, basically the same as...
Okay.
Also same thing with divine intervention.
Okay. Yeah, Susan.
It sort of makes me say there's no such thing as coincidences. This would be just too coincidental that happened, that a man suddenly came at the exact moment to save David's life.
Mm-hmm.
To me, there's no such thing as coincidences. It's too contrived to have been all of a sudden.
So I definitely hear what you're saying, and the timing is really, you know, perfect if you look at it as a reader. If I look at it as David, I might have asked for it to come a little earlier, to be honest. The, you know, it's only perfect from our perspective. But I want to focus you on a question that I'm going to leave hanging, I think, which is this last bit here in the chapter in which Shaul is about to catch David and then he gets the news that the Plishtim are attacking. Is it just a gambit to save David? Is that what's going on here? This is, well, I gotta save David, I'm gonna send the messenger saying that. Or is it also a test of Shaul? Like, let's see where you're holding Shaul. Let's see, you know, is this God knows Shaul is going to do the right thing, or is this also a test for Shaul? I'm not taking any hands. I'm not taking any comments. The point was to ask the question in order to feed into what we're going to do next week. So God willing, next week we're going to come back and finish the chapter with this. We'll do some review questions just to make sure that we got what we needed to get out of this chapter. And then, boy, oh boy, we start chapter 24 in which David has Shaul at his mercy. So that's coming up next, God willing, next week. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. Have a good day.